Good morning! This is Hampton Yunt from Mystery Science Theater 3000, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for April 11th, 2017. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hassenflow.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information this week. Oh my God. Lord, save us. There are so many nerd things this week. And it's Holy Week. And Easter is coming. And the American Revolution is finally over.
It is finally over. The year is 1783, Steve. We're going back in time.
Oh, okay.
We'll be going back in time shortly.
I don't remember podcasting in 1783, so.
It was a primitive type thing to happen.
Just a guy shouting on a corner and nobody listening.
Exactly.
That's what we still do.
What's interesting about this is that the Continental Congress basically proclaimed this is the end of the war. And in a few days later, they actually signed the peace treaty with Britain in Paris. But the Battle of Yorktown ended, I mean, when Cornwallis surrendered, was October 19th, 1781.
Mm-hmm.
So it took, about a year and a half mm-hmm. to get to the point where
they could write it down on paper that it was all over.
That's right. Well, Cornwallis is leaving now. Give us a couple years. We'll go ahead and put this together.
Paperwork takes a while.
I guess so. Well, anyway, this is the founding of our country, and we can celebrate that on this day.
There you go. Happy celebration of the end of the American Revolution.
For those that need a shorthand of this, just pick out your Hamilton soundtrack, and then you can start off with the Battle of Yorktown. And then, of course, you've got to have King George sing at the end what comes next. This is when they finally accepted it.
There you go. Brings us to our movie, our film at 11, our movie of the week. And Chip, it's happening. It's happening this week. Mystery Science Theater 3000 is back. It's coming to Netflix on Friday. All 14 episodes of season 11 are here for us on Friday.
Now, you've got to see the first episode
of
that. Yes,
I have seen Experiment 1101. I've actually seen it twice now because I went to the red carpet premiere here in Chicago, and it was available to us Kickstarter backers on Sunday. So I've seen it.
All right. So, and we're going to have a special podcast.
Yes.
That we have a whole bunch of guests lined up.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to actually discuss this episode because, let me get to the real issue. Steve, 3 years ago, did you think Mystery Science Theater would ever really come back?
No, I really didn't. If you remember, 2 years ago, we talked to Trace Bilou, who was the original mad scientist on Mystery Science Theater, and he said in that interview, there is no way that there's going to be a revival and he is not going to be a part of it. Guess what? There's a revival.
but Joel, mm-hmm. who was the founding member of
the creator.
The creator. He wanted Mystery Science Theater to be something like a Saturday Night Live type of program where writers and actors would float in and float out for a season or so.
The next generation of comedians would come in and be a part of the show. And he is, with any luck, going to get that wish with this new program. Jonah Ray is the new host of MST3K. It's not Joel. It's not Mike. It's Jonah. So we have a whole new crew.
Felicia Day. Patton Oswalt.
Oh, yeah.
So we have a whole new group out there.
And the two robots are new. We have Hampton Yunt, who is the voice of our special introduction today, the new Crow T robot. He's a comedian who is... I'm a little excited about hearing about the new Mystery Science Theater. Like you said, we're going to have a special panel. We're going to put that on the internet on Friday. So stay tuned for more information about MST3K.
Now, this last week, the Blu-ray for Rogue One was released.
On Tuesday.
A Star Wars story.
A Star Wars.
And now, Steve, of course...
went to the store on Tuesday and picked it up and watched it. Yes,
exactly.
Sir.
That's all right.
Exactly right.
So, how many times have you watched Rogue One?
You know, interestingly, this was my second viewing of Rogue One. I saw it in the theater once, and this was my second time watching it when I got home and watched it on Blu-ray on Tuesday.
All right, so watching it for the second time, what did you notice about the movie, which you enjoyed the first time, that you didn't notice?
First of all, this might be, and I'm going to say this out loud, my favorite Star Wars movie. This might be the best Star Wars movie. It takes all of those nostalgic feelings from the 1977 original and makes them into a new 21st century package that we are so into the characters of this mm-hmm. single standalone story, and I was on the edge of my seat. I know how this movie ends. I've seen the sequel 40 years ago.
Well, many people are no longer here.
And we know that these people don't survive. And we know that they are successful. We know that they get the plans to Princess Leia. But I was still on the edge of my seat. Watching it a second time, I was on the edge of my seat a second time. This really? Is so exciting. This is so well put together. The editing is so tight. The costumes are the thing that I really noticed watching it on Blu-ray on the couch. I was okay. into the story in the theater. The story was overwhelming, and I was really interested. But getting to see the detail, especially on Blu-ray, high-definition picture, mm-hmm. there's some beautiful costumes, beautiful sets that they made for this movie. This is quite possibly my favorite Star Wars movie.
Well, it probably was made for an older person watching it, mm-hmm. a person who's had already experienced
the history
of mm-hmm. Star Wars. Anyway, I'm glad you got to watch it.
Me too. Star Wars, Chip. Star Wars. This is just a week. I'm having such a week. You got a chance to see a documentary looking at the prequels. Those are movies that are about Star Wars, but they aren't Star Wars movies. They're about Anakin Skywalker.
And sand.
And sand. Not my favorite Star Wars movies.
All right, so the name of this one is The Prequel Strike Back, A Fan's Journey. Mm-hmm. This was actually released last September, October last year. And so I'm surprised we had not seen something for this.
I didn't see this.
But I'm glad I did get to see it. I actually watched it through Amazon Prime. Now, we have a link through our notes that you can go through, you can stream it, and you can watch it through Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. This was a really, really nice film. And it's an independent film, almost like if I could write a book about Star Wars, about the hooking up the prequels to the original trilogy and looking at the entire body of the work. There's a lot of theories going on in here, and part of the theory is that the Star Wars you remember as a young person, when you watched it, well, it had all the same criticisms that the prequels had. Mm-hmm. Wooden dialogue, mm-hmm. you know, you can write this, but you can't speak it, right. You know, and anyway, we watched it as an adult, and I remember the first time I saw episode one, we actually had a meeting with many of the local salespeople, uh-huh. and we all met for our, I think it was like a 7:30 or 8 a.m. meeting mm-hmm. to watch this prequel. And everybody was jacked up, super excited about seeing it.
Super excited because it was so long between episodes.
Sure. And then when we saw it, we were kind of processing it, and it certainly wasn't the film that as an older person you would want to see. Mm-hmm. But what part of this film is arguing is it wasn't meant for you. It was meant for young people.
Right.
He talked a little bit about how the cameras are set up to film this. They're at a child's height. Why is that interesting? We talk a little bit about the progression of Jar Jar from being this buffoonish Charlie Chaplin character mm-hmm. to at the end of the prequels, walking through the funeral procession, just asking himself, what have I done? Uh-huh. Or am I responsible for this?
Because he started the evil empire by voting it into being.
Misa don't understand.
Oh, boy. Yeah, those movies don't exist for me. I do want to see this.
It talks a little bit about the ring theory on this, mm-hmm. about how 1 and 6, 2 and 5, and 3 and 4 mirror each other. And also the hero's journey goes through this. And there's also conversations with writers on who have an interest in Star Wars, and also academics who have interest in Star Wars, and Kevin Smith. And Kevin Smith is very forgiving mm-hmm. to this film. So you may not acknowledge the prequels.
Nope.
But what we really get from this is that George Lucas, he has a storytelling style that was definitely from the 30s, 40s, 50s, mm-hmm. and maybe even, you know, before sound, that type of way of looking at things. And that wooden way of doing it is what he asked for. And he got it, and it kind of works its way together. The movies that we're going to have released after this are going to be totally different. And we got to see a little bit of that in Rogue One. Mm-hmm. But I highly recommend this film if you have interest in Star Wars. It is a joyful time. Maybe if we maybe we can have a conversation with the writer or the producer of this, because this is a fascinating story.
And it's Star Wars, Chip. Star Wars.
Steve likes Star Wars.
You also got a chance to see Speech and Debate. This is a movie we talked about last week that really seemed like a movie that would be right up my alley, but you got to see it.
Yes, I ended up going to see this. Actually, we rented from iTunes, so it streams also in theaters and available to you. Mm-hmm. This is a story that, for our older listeners, this is The Breakfast Club. Mm-hmm. Maybe this generation, this group of different people from different parts of life who are trying to find their way, and they recognize they have things that have in common. School. That's right. This takes place in high school, and what we have is an intellectual, we have a drama nerd, and we have a gay kid. And they all feel like they don't really fit in, and they're going to work together by joining this drama club and going to their first debate, which they are totally unprepared for, mm-hmm. and they just get slaughtered. This movie has a lot of nice things to say on a scale from 1 to 100, with 100 being the best. This is 50-55, okay. in my opinion. There is one part to it that makes me kind of cringe. I don't want to scare people from it, because I did like the actors, and I do like sort of the story of this. But there was a part where, after they got blasted in the debate and they weren't prepared for it, they all decided they're going to head out to the gay club that's in Portland to be where this gentleman is originally from. And anyway, they slip a drug into the intellectual's beer. Mm. And he gets kind of crazy. They want him to loosen up. They want him to kind of experience life. And my initial thought is, all I could think of was Bill Cosby, Hugh Hefner, yeah. Thigh openers, as they described them, and holy...
This is criminal.
Well, yeah. First of all, it's just, they could have used just, they got him a beer.
Right.
And it loosened him up. Or they got him a glass of wine, and that loosened him up. Mm-hmm. But the idea of slipping a drug into a drink and not telling him about it until later on certainly took it from a John Hughes level to, you know, an area they really did not need to go. They
right.
they could have done the same thing with, oh, they got him a beer and told him to drink it, and he got a little bit you know, drunk, and mm-hmm. he loosened up from that.
Right.
That would have been enough. But to drop a drug and not tell him.
And not have him make the choice. That is criminal.
All right. So anyway, mm-hmm. that was an interesting part to it. I did like it. They use a lot of YouTube videos and things of that nature. There's some winks and fun stuff going on. And interesting, it leads right to the next movie I ended up seeing.
The best picture, Moonlight.
Yes, I saw this last weekend, and mm-hmm. so it got Best Picture, so the Netflix fairy brought it to me. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what this movie was about, and here we go. I'm going to watch a movie about a quiet young man who, it basically is broke up in three parts. It starts off with Little, that was his nickname as a young man. The second part is his name, and the third part is Black, because he's a darker black than some of his friends, so mm-hmm. his friend called him Black. So we get the beginning part when he's probably 7-8 years old. He's just a quiet kid, not really fitting in anywhere. His father is not part of his life. His mother is smoking crack. It takes place in Miami. He ends up running away from some kids who are going to beat him up. And this gentleman ends up finding him in this abandoned apartment building and befriends him. The character is played by Mahershala Ali. So Mahershala Ali plays a lobbyist in Netflix House of Cards. I've also seen him in Luke Cage, mm-hmm. where he played Cottonmouth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's a fun, fun guy.
Great actor. I have not seen House of Cards, but Cottonmouth in Luke Cage is a great role, and he is a great actor.
So he, in this one, he's playing a street-level drug dealer. We don't realize he's a drug dealer early on, but really he's the father figure for this young kid. He takes him out to the ocean because you're in Miami, and he teaches him how to swim. And he's just the stabilizing part of this young man's life. When he needs to escape from his mother, who has a drug abuse problem.
Mm-hmm.
We wake up in the second part. He's in high school, and he's still that equally as quiet guy. But what we find out why he's kind of the quiet guy. I didn't realize it till the movie was this part. He was gay.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, he meets a buddy of his, and they're out on the beach, and they're talking and stuff like that. Anyway, they kiss each other, and you're like, oh. I guess I didn't know he was gay, and this is the moment it happened.
Yeah.
There was an event that happens in school that caused our star to violently react to it. He ends up being sent to juvenile system. And the third part is where we wake up after he's exited that. And he actually has become Ali's character, the drug dealer. But he's in Atlanta at this time. And we get to see how a young person's exposure and what is reasonable what they're experiencing as a young person, you know, potentially just mirrors itself as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's obviously a person who's gone through a tremendous amount. His mother's still having drug issues. But, you know, he's distances himself as much as he can from that. And anyway, I can understand why it got Movie of the Year. I didn't expect this to be it. Throw in my third thing I got to experience this week. I'm driving around Chicagoland. I'm listening to S-Town, which is the new, it's a podcast. It's brought out by NPR.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 7 or 8 part series about a gentleman down in Alabama who is really, first of all we can say is Southern conversations and storytelling. I mean, we could just listen to them all day long. They're so colorful. You know, one of my favorite things this gentleman says is he's going to be heading down to the, I'm heading down, there's kids, they're hanging out at the Little Caesars Pizza Hut. He's going, oh my God, Little Caesars Pizza Hut. Okay. But anyway, that was about a watchmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Who I won't give it away because if you want to listen to it, it's interesting. He actually was gay too, which we eventually find out. But he had there was an event that happened down in Alabama that seemed to not be be somewhat covered up. The internet certainly doesn't look like it's prevalent down there. It's like a dark county as records and newspapers and stuff, things don't get out.
Mm-hmm.
And they think there's a murder down there. So the podcast is about that. It was interesting. Like I said, I ended up watching experiencing three events that all had a similar theme.
Mm-hmm.
And I was unprepared for all three of them.
It's a thematic week for Chip. Opening this week, we'll see if we can find a theme for you this week. Let's see. Let's start off our week on Thursday, April 13th. You and I are going to go to our local movie theater and see the next Fathom event. This one is Riff Tracks Live Samurai Cop.
Now, Samurai Cop, I've already seen the trailer. This looks like an awful movie.
It's an awful movie.
Awful movie. And so it's ripe for a riffing troupe to basically make, they basically sit and watch the movie and make fun of it the entire time.
Yes.
If you are in our area and you want to join us, mm-hmm. just inbox us. And we'll tell you where we are.
Yep.
If you are anywhere in the United States and you've got a movie theater near you, look for the Fathom events. This is going to be there, and we've always had a good time
there.
We
have always had a good time with the Riff Tracks guys. These are the same guys that were the Mystery Science Theater 3000 troupe. They have moved on, and they formed their own riffing troupe, and they're just as funny.
And just a reminder that Friday, Mystery Science Theater is going to 3000. They're dropping all 14 episodes on Netflix.
So don't call Steve after Friday.
I just want you to know that when I just want you to know on Thursday night, you know, Steve's going to be watching this Riff Tracks movie. At midnight, he'll get home and he'll start watching. It's Good Friday, so you know he's off. He's not working.
That's right.
So he'll be able to watch all 14.
All day. One thing I'm probably going to do, I don't know yet for sure, I'm probably going to not watch the Christmas episode for a while. Like, I know that there's a Christmas episode.
Steve's going to sacrifice on Easter weekend right there.
Not watch the Christmas episode.
So he's going to have a Good Friday. He's going to have
even better Saturday.
We'll get down to better Saturday in a moment.
Oh, boy. We'll get to Saturday.
Because after he finishes watching all of his Mystery Science Theater 3000, what else is he going to watch on Netflix?
Well, Netflix is also the network for all of your Adam Sandler needs. They have signed another contract with Adam Sandler for another 4 movies, but there's an Adam Sandler movie coming out this week.
He's still working on the first contract right here.
This one's called Sandy Wexler, and it's about a talent scout who's Adam Sandler.
Who cares a lot?
Let's just call him Adam Sandler.
I wonder who he's basing this on. He has to know this person.
It's certainly based on at least one talent person that he has talked to in the last 40 years.
There's a lot of guest stars on this.
Yes.
At some point, you'll cringe because there's going to be something that'll be not thematic to the movie that'll show up. But
I got to say, the trailer looks really good.
And kids love it.
And
we can say whatever we want about Adam Sandler movies. They're always the highest viewed movies.
On Netflix. Yep.
Line up the 10 highest viewed movies on Netflix, and probably 4 of them are going to come from Adam Sandler.
That's right. There's also The Fate of the Furious, the next sequel of the Fast and the Furious franchise. Fast cars, driving fast. I've never seen one of these movies.
I haven't either, but these are really big films.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're family.
Yeah.
Their family. Anyway, this is going to do incredibly well. I'm sure they're a lot of fun to watch. These are one of the ones that I'll watch one day and I go, wow, these are really good. Because they'll run them. But anyway, this is the latest version of it. I think we've got Vin Diesel and The Rock in it.
Oh, really?
So you know it's going to be good.
There you go. The true life drama pick of the week is called The Lost City of Zed. Not Z, because it's a British. See, I said it right.
That's right.
This is a true life drama. A British explorer goes into the Amazon and finds a group of people that were unknown to culture.
This looks really good. Yeah. Sort of Indiana Jones-ish.
He's got a leather jacket at one point and a hat. And it's like, oh, that's Indiana Jones.
All he needs to be running with like a big boulder behind him or something. Oh, no. They're going to go over the waterfall.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is not an action adventure like Indiana Jones, but there are a lot of archaeology type things in it. This looks really fun.
It looks like a really good true life drama adventure kind of movie.
Steve, there's a movie that's coming out that we all want to say, yeah, bravo for bringing out.
Absolutely. Those of you who have been following any of the Percy Jackson movies, there were 2 Percy Jackson movies that were released, big studio, special effects, Rick Riordan's books turned into fantastic adventures. The studios decided not to make the 3rd one.
Well, there's a bunch of kids who are pretty upset about that.
Yes, and one particular kid has decided he is going to make a movie. It's called Percy Jackson and the Titan's Curse. It is based on the 3rd book of the series, and this is an 11-year-old fan, a fan-made film. I love the idea of this story.
This is going to be streaming on the internet.
Yeah.
So we got to see one of the ones. We got to see one that was a total remake of the Raiders of the Lost Ark film, didn't we? Raiders, the story of the greatest fan film ever made, came out. Now, that was started out by some children who wanted to recreate Raiders of the Lost Ark
back in the 80s,
scene by scene, and they got almost all of it done,
except for the big airplane fight at the end.
And so somehow they got funding for it.
20 years on,
and they were anyway. They finished the film.
That's the kind of the story that I'm looking at for this Percy Jackson.
But this is different. This looks like it was done like maybe over a summer.
Yeah.
And the beautiful part about this is we have the technology. Mm-hmm. It's inexpensive enough to do a lot of this stuff. There are some special effects. If you watch the trailer, his eyes turn, you know, fiery red. So anyway, 11-year-old had decided, listen, I wanted a third party as a movie. I'm going to make this.
Make it myself. You guys aren't going to make this movie? Fine. I'll make it myself. This was me. When I was that age, I was walking around with a video camera and making movies, very much like Adam Goldberg, that's now made a sitcom out of all of his videos.
Well, this is from, this is going to be streaming on the internet. Mm-hmm. I highly encourage anybody who has interest to go watch the fun.
There you go. Starting on Saturday.
So we had a pretty good Thursday.
Riff Tracks.
We had a good Friday.
Mystery Science Theater 3000.
This is better Saturday.
And then on Saturday, Doctor Who Season 10 premieres on BBC America.
So Steve, once again, will not have any opportunity to go out and get some fresh air.
No. No. Don't call me. Don't call me on Thursday. Don't call me on Friday. Don't call me on Saturday.
That pasty white look doesn't just, you know, make itself.
Yes. Doctor Who is back. It is the same actor playing the Doctor this one last season. Peter Capaldi is going to be there for one more season. He has a new companion named Bill, and she is going to find all sorts of fun adventures with the Doctor starting on Saturday.
Now, this is going to be on BBC America, mm-hmm. so anyone has a some kind of service that will allow them to have BBC America mm-hmm. will be able to watch this, but let's just say that you did not want to watch it by yourself or with your family. You wanted to watch it with a group of people. Then you can go to your local theater that has Fathom Events,
mm-hmm.
and you can watch it with your buddies.
I love Fathom Events more every week because they always have something good. This is going to be in theaters April 17th and 19th, the first episode of the new Doctor Who season. Go to find your Fathom Events, fathomevents.com, and find your theater and go be a part of the community while you're watching this.
And then, Steve, there's another Doctor Who show coming on right after.
Right after. Stay tuned after Doctor Who for the premiere of Class. This is a spin-off of Doctor Who. It's a bunch of teenagers that are in Coal Hill School, which is the school that was featured in the very first episode of Doctor Who in 1963.
Of course. Uh-huh. Who can forget that?
No, who can't? And these kids are going to be fighting monsters and all sorts of things from the Doctor Who universe. And the Doctor does show up in the pilot. And this is a really fun show.
This is supposed to be a serial, kind of like Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
It is. It has been compared to Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It is very similar in its tone. Definitely made for a high school audience. There's a high school vibe to it.
As if Doctor Who isn't?
Correct. Doctor Who is made for middle-aged men, and those who were in high school 30 years ago, yeah. This is for the next generation.
Of course.
Class is premiering here in the United States on Saturday. It had already run its course in Britain. They had already shown all the episodes there.
Steve's already seen them.
I wouldn't say that.
Anyway, and from what we're understanding, this may be the only season.
There's a really good chance that this has already been canceled in the BBC in the UK, but they had scheduled to put it on in BBC America 6 months later. So we are going to get these episodes here in America, and whether or not we'll see any further episodes is a giant question mark right now.
Broadcast television must go on.
I guess it does. I mean, we've got 11-year-olds making Percy Jackson movies. Does broadcast television really survive? I don't know.
All right.
Brings us to our book of the week. And speaking of Doctor Who, I picked up a copy of Whographica. This is an infographic guide to space and time. It's 224 pages of infographics based on the 53 years of television history that is Doctor Who.
And for people who can't picture that in their mind, you think of it as words that maybe show as pictures, flowcharts, mm-hmm. those types of things. And they're beautifully colorful.
Hundreds of pages of them.
And you could Beautiful. Spend a lot of time.
This is a coffee table book. This is a book that you're not going to spend a lot of time reading page to page to page. You're going to pick this up and look at the stunning graphics that they did on this page. Sure. And then you're going to flip to a different one and go, wow, that is amazing that they put this together.
And a lot of times they're connecting parts of the show, mm-hmm. one season to another, or the introduction of a character and when they show up again, or any number of types of
a lot of
fun things.
Looking at the different costuming that they used for the last 53 years, a lot of the sets and the props. This is a lot of information. I really applaud these three guys who put this together because they spent a lot of time doing a lot of research for this book, and now we have it.
And we, the people who enjoy Doctor Who, I mean, they're pretty...
be nice.
Not, I mean, they're a pretty intense group.
Yes,
of,
we are.
Of their enjoyment of this. And as, you know, we were watching the Lego Batman movie a couple months ago, and the Daleks came on, these the bad guys, and they said, oh, ask your nerd friends.
Ask your nerd friends.
You know, they're giving a little wink to the Doctor Who group.
Right. Yes, we are a group of people that spends a lot of money and a lot of time on this property. There's no doubt about that.
The Whovians and Lego want their products somewhere.
You look around. There's a lot of Lego and a lot of TARDISes in this basement right now.
And a TARDIS is a...
That's the spaceship that Doctor Who travels in.
It looks like something else.
It looks like a blue police box because it got stuck in that shape in 1963, and he hasn't figured out how to change its shape since 1963.
Oh my goodness! All right, let's bring us back.
Brings us to our appetite, our app of the week, which is Doctor Who is available right now. All the available classic Doctor Who episodes are available now, streaming for $6.99 a month here in the United States on a website called BritBox.
Now, as some of us would say, oh my God, this will never end. But as Steve says, oh my goodness.
This will never end. This is phenomenal. This came out, we talked about BritBox a couple of months back, probably 6 months ago, more like, and we said, wow, all of the Doctor Who episodes are being pulled off of all of the other streaming services. They're going to give us all of the Doctor Who episodes in one BritBox. Mm-hmm. And then BritBox was rolled out without Doctor Who for months and months. And I looked at it and went, well, I'm not going to give them $6.99. They don't have Doctor Who. They have all these other great British programs that are wonderful, but they don't have Doctor Who. Tuesday morning, April 4th, they said, we have all of the episodes of classic Doctor Who. You can have them for 22 cents a day, Steve. And I said, 22 cents a day? I'll watch 22 cents a day of Doctor Who every day of my life for the rest of my life. Here you go, BritBox.
Well, there you go. In fact, that's wonderful for a person like you mm-hmm. who likes to stream your entertainment.
Because I don't have cable, I have that $6.99 available for my entertainment budget.
And your ability to also, you know, watch it on demand as mm-hmm. opposed to waiting for it. Oh, it's on Saturday at 11 o'clock. I've got to tape it.
I do still tape it off of PBS on Saturday at 11 o'clock, just so you know.
And I just guessed that was on PBS at 11 o'clock.
Saturday.
I just want to tell you, I pulled that out of my mind. Somehow I knew it was there. Yeah, you know, right around the time the Twilight Zone was going to be.
Doctor Who is a lifestyle. There is no question about it. And BritBox.
For some people, it's a lifestyle.
It is.
Well, if you're in Elgin, mm-hmm. you can go by the Blue Box Cafe.
Yeah, go say hi to Chris and all the wonderful things at the Blue Box Cafe in Elgin and learn more about Doctor Who. Pick up your copy.
People go to events and they go out of their way to stop by there because of his love of this show.
And he has good food. And he's a great guy.
Well, that's true. But but what I'm saying is that the fans mm-hmm. have a lot of passion for this.
Yep. 7 more months till the Chicago TARDIS convention. Brings us to our now the news, so we can talk about something other than Doctor Who. Let's talk about some facts instead of fiction.
All right. So last week we talked about, I can't remember if the representatives or the Senate had passed the bill, basically taking your internet history and making it available to the
advertisers. The ISPs now can sell your browsing history to advertisers.
So the president has basically signed that into law now, mm-hmm. and that really is, for many people, that's going to be a little upsetting, mm-hmm. Because all of a sudden your private browser history through something like Google is now available for someone to pick up and to use you know, for good or potentially for bad.
To be fair, your Google history has always been owned by Google, and sure, they have been selling it to advertisers and making a lot of money from that. This is the ISPs themselves.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Verizon, AT&T, and all of those companies now have the right to that data as well, and Comcast, the right to sell it to advertisers.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the potential good that's come from this. Mm-hmm. Immediately, I'm an AT&T telephone user. Mm-hmm. I use their, and you use Verizon.
Correct.
And because I also, through my internet, I use UVerse, and that means I have DirecTV and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Now I have HBO available to me at no additional cost.
On top of what you were already paying for your unlimited phone service.
That's right. And I have unlimited data. Mm-hmm. So what that allows me to have is this HBO as part of it. And it's not going to be used against my data cap as if I had a data cap. I have unlimited data.
Well, you have a certain pseudo amount data cap where, sure, where they will throttle you after 20 gigabytes a month.
Yeah, that's a lot of data, by the way, to pull.
Yeah, not for my 11-year-old. He used 44 last month.
Did he really?
Yes, he did.
Oh, my goodness.
He watches a lot of video.
He needs to learn the world of Wi-Fi again.
Yes.
Anyway, the potential good is that we can get little services like that. Now, that is breaking sort of one of the rules of the internet, is that data should be data.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've created a new tier of data, mm-hmm, that preferred data versus everyone else's data.
Right.
And that's pretty cool, and everything's cool until all of a sudden, you know, Amazon can only run on it and everybody else get the super slow speed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just an example of how potentially could be bad stuff.
Right.
But let's talk about some of the potential bad, because Virginia Tech had a group of researchers that looked at some Android apps. And what do we find out?
That some of them are conspiring together to get your data and to aggregate the data from a group of people to be able to sell to advertisers more information about you.
So let's talk about how Google would say this. We get to know more about you so we can better target you with that's what right you really want.
And that's absolutely true. I am a fan of targeted advertising. I don't want to see ads for things I don't want. I also want to stop seeing ads for things I just bought.
But the negative way of that could be worked is they won't show you things.
Only certain information will be given to you.
Or what if we only knew, uh-huh, Steve was willing to pay this amount, but you know, even though it could be offered for less, uh-huh, he's willing to pay this because in the past he's always spent that much on it. You went to McDonald's, for my example, and you could have bought the Big Mac for $5, but you know, from the past we thought that you could spend $7 on it.
So we charged you $7 instead of $5.
And I walk, mm-hmm, in with the same one, and they said, well, you know, Chip's never ordered this Big Mac.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why don't we give it for $3?
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of, this is the challenge of conspiring against you, mm-hmm, is how we would kind of look at it. We don't know where this will ultimately take. We're now in sort of uncharted territory. My hope is that we're gonna get something good from this. I'm going to have a wait and see. And my hope is, if this is not working out, that we can quickly bring it back to where the web is, the data becomes data again.
And part of that conversation is the fact that there are so many people using Android phones. We have an interesting graph in our show notes that you can go check out and see how the percentage of users of Windows versus the percentage of users of Android has flip-flopped.
All right, so we're talking about getting access to the internet,
mm-hmm,
and the way we used to get to the internet was most of us would have our computer and we would go through our Windows computer and we get on the internet. Well, with the explosion of people with their handheld devices,
smartphones,
and those smartphones using Android, mm-hmm, because if you're in a third world country or if you're a person in any part of the United States,
mm-hmm,
most of us are using Android.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting to the internet through this device.
Mm-hmm.
This is really interesting because it finally flipped, where more people are accessing the internet through Android,
mm-hmm,
than they are through these Windows computers.
It's amazing.
So, wow.
A 5-year change. It is amazing to look at this chart. Also amazing, this year is the year that I might get access to cable television, but not through cable. YouTube TV has launched in 5 metropolitan areas. Chicago is one of those 5. So Thursday morning, I signed on to YouTube TV, and I now have access to a lot of different cable channels.
Now, this is an app. We'll review this app maybe next week.
Yeah, probably.
As we get a little more used to it, because you showed me the app.
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you, the it's beautiful on how you can get to this group of...
the program guide. The program guide has on it a live stream of what's happening on that channel right at this moment in the programming guide.
And it's easy to get to. You're basically flipping through it. Mm-hmm. This is exactly what Steve Jobs was talking about, that Apple TV, the television was ripe for disruption. And if you, as wonderful as TiVo was at one time, and the version of guides, programming guides, mm-hmm. that are available now, they really are still not very user-friendly.
This is.
And the beautiful part about YouTube TV, this is a streaming service, mm-hmm. so you have to have your internet, and you can download. But the beautiful part about it is all those sports channels that were never fully packaged together.
And were never a part of my lifestyle, because I don't watch sports. But my 11-year-old loves sports. There's so many sports channels on YouTube TV.
But even if the services that were, they were fractured. You have to get one that you get Fox Sports, and the other one you could get ESPN, but you couldn't get one with both.
Now this has both.
This has both. This has CBS SN, this is NBC SN, has Golf TV.
Comcast Sportsnet.
And for why that's important to us here in the Chicago area, mm-hmm. that's where you get the Blackhawks.
Right.
So this is
the hockey app for the 11-year-old. It's $35 a month. The first month is free. If you pay for the second month, you get a free Chromecast, which is a $35 device that allows you to stream this from your phone to your big TV.
Sure, and I actually have my new office television actually has Android already in it. Mm-hmm. My assumption is that it's already there. This is opening in a number of markets. We have Chicago, LA, New York, Philadelphia, and San Francisco. Mm-hmm. My assumption, this is going to go real well, and it'll be rolled out to the rest of the world.
It might be a game changer. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago.
I think this is a game changer. I think the mm-hmm. DirecTV Now mm-hmm. Is AT&T's response to this. Mm-hmm. So,
and Hulu's coming out with their version soon, and I'll see if that is maybe the right solution for my family. And then Verizon is working on something, and they have not rolled out exactly what they're working on, but they're working on some live TV something, and maybe that's the solution for my family.
Well, think about what competition has been able to do so far. Mm-hmm. We've been able to drive... The price of cable television, which was going up to $150 a month mm-hmm. for like everything, we've been able to drive it down to $35 a month mm-hmm. because people are choosing to watch their entertainment differently.
And because those mobile devices, we are walking around with these smartphones, and getting their entertainment from that device instead of the big TV is certainly a part of the lifestyle.
Passover started last night.
Happy Passover to all of our listeners who celebrate Passover.
So this is the first day of Passover. Uh-huh. And then we obviously we're in the middle of Holy Week. Mm-hmm. And we've already talked about Good Friday coming up.
Yes.
And then we have Easter, which means ham.
Ham and eggs.
Ham and eggs. Or the Charlie Brown, it's the Easter Beagle.
Yes.
We've learned that it's the pre-Christmas sales going on at all of the stores. Only 246 days till Christmas. Yeah, whatever it is.
Oh, peanuts.
Charles Schulz, you had a way of saying something to
us. Oh, you blockhead.
So eat some Easter candy. My goodness.
Watch some MST3K and some Doctor Who.
That's right.
Don't call me this weekend.
What's your favorite Easter candy?
Jelly beans. Specifically the Chicago-based Jelly Belly jelly beans.
Well, that was President Reagan's favorite, too. I love Jelly Bellies, too. And the Cadbury eggs. Lots of sweetness there.
Very British. It's very British of you.
Are they British?
Oh, yeah. Cadbury?
I think they're owned by Hershey now.
Well, now, yeah.
Now. Anyway, this year they actually brought out the Reese's version of that. So
really?
Yeah.
A bunch of peanut butter in your egg?
A lot of peanut butter.
Oh, boy.
You can't get wrong with peanut butter.
There you go.
So anyway, eat your candy, celebrate
Easter. Watch your crummy movies and your silly British sci-fi.
Enjoy your family. And
them too. Right. I'll have them in the room too.
And for everyone who's not Steve, let's go outside because it's going to be beautiful. Spring has finally arrived.
There you go. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Only if we can come back next week.
I think we can. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find it. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, news.toomuchscrolling.com. Find out all the information you need. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
Thanks, Easter Bunny.
Brock, Brock. We'll see you in the future. The not too distant future.